Eventually, Detroit's bankruptcy filing will be over. Eventually, emergency manager Kevin Orr will no longer be in charge of Detroit finances. When those things happen, Detroit goes back to being run by its city government, by a mayor and city council. Daniel Howes, columnist at the Detroit News, focused on this future in his column yesterday in the news. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm good. I was real intrigued with your column looking into the future. And tell us why and what does it mean that Kevin Orr is looking at this future city government? Should this be within his role as EM?
He does have the role to, or the ability to look at or propose at least structural changes that could help with governance. He can't do it unilaterally, is my understanding. So what he's doing right now, even as he's prosecuting, trying to prosecute this bankruptcy in bankruptcy court, he's reaching out to experts in governance and the like for essentially study and recommendations that he could put forth to a city council, or potentially they could propose to be put forth before the voters to change the charter in ways that could help the city be more efficient, to act more speedily, to reform things. As we saw in the last year or so, the charter has been a barrier to reform in several cases, and they recognize that. And I think this is part of a broader push to not only do a short-term restructuring, but make sure that there are reforms in place that would enable the political leadership down the road to manage the city more effectively.
So it's bringing in fresh eyes.
Yeah, essentially. I mean, they're reaching out to the Ford Foundation. There's a new institute at NYU for the study of cities and urban environments that has offered and actually came to the city of Detroit and said, we would like to help you do this and make some recommendations. This is in the early stages, and clearly this is not his top priority. He's got other things, including a hearing before Judge Rhodes to get certain lawsuits thrown out, but this is something that he has to do, and it's part of the managing for the long term.
Because the whole idea is, let's not go through all of this and, fix the $18 billion in long-term liabilities, get that restructured, and then he leaves, and here we go all over again.
Well, I think that's exactly right, and you know, there's a lot of doubt and skepticism on the part of players in the municipal finance market that Detroit can, in fact, fix its culture and fix its dysfunction. I think it's a very cynical approach, personally. I mean, it's akin to what we saw with the auto bankruptcies, where, or even in Ford's case, where they did not go through bankruptcy, but they financed their own restructuring, and here we are on the other side of it, and these companies are run differently. They look different. They've got fewer brands. They've also got fewer employees and fewer plants. But they are executing in a much more consistent fashion than they did before the implosion.
Well, you write some interesting points here, Daniel Howes. The effort will prove controversial. It likely would be considered an affront to yet another tradition of self-government in a city whose elected city council and mayor are now secondary to the decision-making of a Washington bankruptcy lawyer appointed by Governor Rick Snyder. So what does this mean, in your view, for the democratic system of government?
Well, I think they're sensitive. When I say they, the emergency manager's team and the governor's office, they're sensitive to appearing to bigfoot this and essentially unilaterally try to change the charter. And it's not at all clear that they can even do that. But I think they are trying to be realistic here and say there are barriers to reform in Detroit. The charter is one aspect of that. It militates against, for example, being able to privatize certain kinds of services. I don't think there's any doubt that when we get on the other side of this bankruptcy, there are going to be services offered to the Detroiters that will not be offered by employees of the city. So as a practical matter, I think they're raising some legitimate points. Now, anything that is perceived to come from the governor or Kevin Orr is going to be, I think, greeted with some measure of hostility and resistance. But it's very important to recognize this as a legal matter. The city of Detroit is a creation of the state of Michigan. It's not a sovereign city. It's a creation of the state. The state is sovereign, but it's not. The city is not. And, you know, the governor, I think, is within his purview to at least raise some of these questions, because at the end of the day, the state does have some responsibility for what happens in Detroit, and that's why he's doing what he's doing. But these are, as they've pointed out to me, recommendations. The governor in an interview said, you know, this is about preventing things from rolling back down the hill, was the metaphor that he used. And that is, we're going to make progress here, and we don't want to finish this job and then all of a sudden be back in the same situation 10 years from now.
Daniel, especially for listeners who are not Detroiters and perhaps haven't been kept up to speed on how it's governed, talk some more about this charter and changes that you think need to be made in it.
Well, I think one of the things is, I understand the charter, and I haven't read it line by line, but as I understand it, it has, for example, protections and of the union workforce, and that certain services cannot, and most services cannot be privatized. We had a situation where, or the city had a situation where its attorney, the corporation counsel, could not be fired by the mayor. Part of this is a legacy of the Kwame Kilpatrick years. I think some of the restrictions that were put into the charter when it was revised a couple of years ago were a reaction to what Mayor Kilpatrick was doing and the way he was running roughshod over the checks and balances within the system. So what I think you see here is the classic case of overcorrecting. We saw in the situation of Mike Duggan running for mayor and then being disqualified because it said that a candidate had to live in the city for 1 year. Well, does that mean that if a candidate lived in the city for 1 year and 3 days that they couldn't run for mayor either? So there's a lot of wording and things that could be construed to block change, essentially. And in one case, it was used against Mike Duggan. In another case, it was used to keep Crystal Crittenden in the office of Corporation Counsel long after it became clear that the person that was essentially running the city of Detroit, at least from a policy perspective, was the Corporation Counsel, and she was not answerable to the mayor or to a majority of council. They'd have to have six members vote to oust her before she could be fired.
Where do you expect the most pushback to come from as OR tries to make Detroit City Hall work better and tries to lay the groundwork for the future?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the most pushback is going to probably come from organized labor. You know, the salaried ranks don't have the same kind of clout in a situation like this. But it's important to note that Chapter 9 bankruptcy gives the court and the debtor, who in this case would be Kevin Orr, an enormous amount of power to invalidate contracts and make changes. So I think you're going to have general pushback, but I think what people are going to be surprised by, my guess is the speed with which all this is going to happen. It's very we're used to watching Detroit government move very slowly, take one or two steps forward and a couple steps back. What we have now under this emergency manager law, and now in Chapter 9, is a group of professionals hired to do a job. You've got Kevin Orr, who was brought in as the manager. You have restructuring experts, accounting firms, lawyers, they're all professionals.
New chief financial officer.
These people are not running for office. They're not looking towards the next primary. They're not looking at the next general election. They're not eyeing, as a general proposition, running for mayor at any time in the future. They've been brought in to do a job, and they're technicians, and I think, and they have the power of the court now that they can put things before the court and have the judge rule upon them. And I think from what we hear of Judge Stephen Rhodes, he's a hard-nosed judge. He's a no-nonsense guy, and he's decisive. He doesn't wish a wash around. He's also been a guy who has been very outspoken at the fact that some of the biggest bankruptcies in Southeast Michigan have not been adjudicated in Detroit. General Motors, Chrysler, Kmart, Delphi, they've all been done in New York or outside of the Eastern District of Michigan. And he now is presiding over probably one of the biggest bankruptcies ever in Southeast Michigan, certainly from a historic perspective. And I think he's going to take that duty very seriously from what I've seen of some of the filings already.
Detroit News columnist Daniel Howes, as always, a pleasure talking with you. Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you very much.